You are listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to an episode of the An Archaeologist Podcast. Now today I have a team with me. Team that's talking about the past, almost like the passage of time. But what would I call such a team? Would the team be the past team? No. Would the team be those from the past? No, there must be a better way to call my team who care about time. Of course, today we're talking about Time Team, and I'm not going to labor that point too much any longer. Of course, Time Team was one of the reasons that a lot of archaeologists actually even go and study archaeology. I know that it made up a large part of my childhood, even though I didn't know I was an archaeologist then. I was an archaeologist hiding, didn't even know. But in any case, what I've done is I've assembled together some people who are fans and archaeologists themselves and are interested in talking about what Time Team means. And of course, it is all very relevant because right now there's a campaign to convince Channel 4 to produce one final episode of Time Team, which is in memory of Mick Ashton, who is one of the main archaeologists on the show. Now, if you haven't seen Time Team, don't worry. Turn on Channel 4 in the middle of the day, and you'll get every episode from start to finish, cycled around every couple of weeks. And, of course, it's also available online, so there's no problem there. So, I want to introduce my wonderful guests. She's back from the last episode. It's Kim Buttle.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me back.
Next up, we have James Dilley of Ancient Crafts UK.
Hey, how's it going?
And finally, I've got Paul.
Hello. Hello. Very pleased to be here. Thank you.
And thank you, everybody, for coming today. So, I'll start off with you, Paul, actually. So, tell me, Time Team, what does it mean to you?
Time Team means to me a number of things. First of all, I think it represents the best of British television in a way. I think that when British television gets it right, it really does get it right. And to me, that's what Time Team is. I think that I remember seeing, well, not really seeing, I heard the trailer for the first episode that went out. But there were a lot of people talking at the time, so I didn't pay much attention to it. And I thought it was a spoof documentary, a mockumentary, if you will, because of Tony Robinson's involvement, and I only knew him from Blackadder. So I tuned in largely on those grounds. I had always been interested in history, particularly theatre history and social history, which I now work in. But that wasn't the reason that I tuned in. But when I did, I was absolutely just captivated. And I genuinely can say I've never actually missed an edition of it.
That's quite amazing. I must say, that's very, very dedicated. James, were you as dedicated as that? I mean, come on, that's quite a bar. I mean, can you make that?
I don't know if I can say that I've watched every one, because I became quite specialised in my interests fairly quickly. But I can remember from a really young age, parents and family members possibly having it on, and then very quickly deciding that if it wasn't any way associated in prehistory, then I was perhaps slightly less interested. But you know, if there was any kind of hint of particularly the Stone Age being on the show, I was there, definitely.
Oh, that's obviously sometimes the first time people get to see archaeologists digging instead of being, you know, bumbling around a museum. So, I mean, obviously, like, I take it you've done your fair share of digging in your time.
Well, I've dug with my university, Southampton. I've dug in the Stonehenge and Avebury landscape, which has been amazing.
Are you a human form of Time Team or something? Or are you just like taking off all the really famous monuments and dig sites in the UK there? Oh yeah, so I've dug at Stonehenge before. Don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's kind of important.
Yeah, it's something to put on your CV, isn't it? It's definitely one of those things to do before you die if you're anywhere involved in archaeology.
And do you think Time Team kind of prepared you for archaeology, or do you think you got a good idea of archaeology from Time Team?
As someone who was outside of the archaeological world, especially as a young person seeing this in front of me, yeah, I mean, I would definitely say that it really was something to encourage me and inspire me, rather than, again, a few years down the line trying to think about what to do. I already had the interest that was no doubt sparked by Time Team.
No, that's a really good interest to have. Of course, we're an archaeology podcast. Of course, we're going to say that. And Kim, of course, being an archaeologist, what's your opinion on Time Team?
Well, Time Team is definitely, along with the discovery of the Iceman in the Alps, the reason I got into archaeology. I looked back at all the episodes, the very early ones, trying to find the one that captivated me, and I found it was actually episode 4 of the first ever series, and there were only 4 episodes that series, in 1994. It was broadcast first, apparently, on the 6th of February. That was 4 days before my 16th birthday. And that is when I decided I wanted to be an archaeologist. It was actually an excavation of a crannog in Wales, of all places. They're very unusual in Wales. A crannog at Llan Gorse. And I remember very clearly from that time that they found a beautiful finger ring made of shale, completely pristine, and that they kept it in a Ziploc bag with water in it. And I had no idea why at the time. And they didn't explain it, actually, either. When I rewatched the episode, why it was kept in water, because the whole site was waterlogged. Mm-hmm. And it was finding that very personal item that they that was obviously very important to the archaeologists to find as well, that just completely captivated me. Once I became an archaeologist and kind of did all the university degrees and did some digging, I kind of went off Time Team. And it might have been some kind of weird professional snobbery. But in some ways, it was a bit like a busman's holiday. I didn't really want to come home from digging on the clay in Essex in the winter and then put Time Team on and get more archaeology in my face. But it's really nice to see it now and to see the huge number of sites that they excavated, really sometimes putting a real boost into the local archaeology of that area. So I've gone back to it now.
Which is good to hear. I'm glad you're back. Glad you're back in the building. Now, obviously, one of the things that stands out about Time Team is the presenters. Ultimately, they are the ones that carried a lot of the show. Of course, the archaeology did as well, and of course, the finds did. But ultimately, we all knew our ideas about how archaeologists dress came from Time Team. Oh, the wonderful jumpers. Oh, the tatty, like, the rags that were jeans at one point. So, Paul, what was your impression of our wonderful presenters? I mean, obviously, it was Baldrick at the fore there.
It was, absolutely.
He's had several cunning plans since. Oh, dear.
Yes.
I should have said it perfectly. Oh, damn it.
Do you know what it was for me? Is I think that we're so used now to our media has to be presented by people who have a certain look, this well-kempt, idealistic look, almost. And with Time Team, here clearly was a show where that wasn't such an important point. So it didn't matter, I suppose, in a way that you had Mick with his wonderful jumpers. And you have Phil with that wonderful hat. I mean, the hat is Phil. I believe that Phil's hat has its own Twitter account, if I think I'm right.
It
there.
Actually does. Yes, you're right.
Yes. So for me, I suppose, with the presenters, it was the fact that I wasn't seeing television presenters so much. I was seeing people who had a love for their subject. And I suppose it's rather like you remember the teachers from your school days. who are able to captivate you and take you on a journey because they love their subject and they can infuse you like that. And I think that that was what I got from all of these remarkably different personalities. I mean, for me, it was always Victor Ambus. I don't know, there was something so relaxed about the man. And just to see him sketching was always such a wonderful treat. And I think that for me, Victor's illustrations took me more to the time, if you like, than any of the CGI did, which is always very impressive, of course. But that human touch of his work, I thought, was a wonderful thing. And the fact that also that ultimately Time Team didn't seem to be presenter-led. It was very much, at least, you know, for the first couple of decades almost, it was very much to do with the subject. I think later on, possibly, it became a little more involved in sort of like presenters and things like that. But for me, it was the fact that you had people here who adored what they were doing, and that enthusiasm every Sunday, that was transferred through the television to me without any problem at all.
And James, were you inspired by the presenters?
Yeah, definitely. One of my lifetime goals or dreams for a long time has been to do some more TV and media work. That and seeing people sort of doing Flintknap and Ancient Crafts on TV, I've definitely been very heavily influenced by archaeology on TV. Time Team's part of that. Seeing some of the, particularly the Elvedon episode when they do the Lower Paleolithic dig, and both Flintknapper John Lord and Phil are doing a bit of napping. You know, that's perfect. I mean, I'm doing my MA in Paleolithic archaeology now and still fondly think of that episode occasionally, digging in the really soft sediments, pulling out some great environmental data. So from a point of view now, when you're going through the material and the information from a really detailed level, obviously they can't put it across to a PhD or MA standard, because you're looking at a very limited audience, but they still put it across in a way, either with the CGI reconstruction or artist reconstruction, that make a very distant period very accessible to everyone.
And that's one of the great things, is that Time Team also does kind of cover a lot of different kind of time periods. Actually, I'm just looking at a number of stats for the show. Would you believe it's had 20 series? I don't know if that is that right term. 20 series, which comprise of 275 episodes. That is quite a lot. And obviously, those are across a number of years, with the first broadcast, as mentioned before, starting off on the 16th of January, 1994. Now, Kim, would you ever consider presenting a show like Time Team?
Oh, God, I'd love to. As James says, it does make archaeology really accessible, and it explains so many things to people that they would never have known about how archaeology works. And I think that was one of the greatest achievements of it. I mean, like, the word geophys is now in, you know, everyday vocabulary. Although I'm not sure that everybody knows what it means.
Of everyday. Yeah. I must say that I'd be very impressed if, like, geophys. Next, for this is the round on archaeology in today's pub quiz. What is the term for geophys?
Oh, I think you'd be surprised. but yeah, it would be amazing to have that kind of experience. But I think what was great about Time Team as well was, as Paul said, just the number of people involved in it. It wasn't, and I know Tony kind of brought it all together, but it was definitely an ensemble cast, as it were. And everybody had a particular expertise, and what was great was that they all worked together pretty well, seemed to get on pretty well on screen, obviously. Yeah, they all contributed in very different ways to the project. So yeah, that would be amazing. I'm not sure whether, you know, going out and doing more digs around the country should be done exactly the same way, But I mean, there have been, you know, other programs that have tried to kind of take on the mantle, haven't they? Like the, I think, was the extreme archaeology one? I can't remember what it was about, where they were digging it inside of cliffs. What was it, James?
Extreme Archaeology was a great show.
Yeah. Wasn't Alice Roberts in that?
I think they, on some occasions, they did have some of the time team, but none of the main ones. Sort of the sub team they had on occasionally, but yeah, that was definitely a bit of a adrenaline junkie archaeology, very different to the a bit more realistic view that Time Team approaches. It was definitely extreme by nature and title.
Yeah, but it didn't carry on really, did it?
And no,
it was a bit of a shame. I'm not sure if there is there really a successor to Time Team out there.
Just going to say that I think that it's interesting when you see that the amount of other programs that have some way tried to emulate its success or examine archaeology, and for some reason they just don't seem to have that same grip on the public. I remember another was Two Men in a Trench. I think that was back in 2002. I think that was. And that worked. No, hang on.
There's a guy with long hair. What's his name? He does
Neil Oliver.
Yeah, that's right. But I think it only managed the one series. I mean, it was an enjoyable program, and I've never quite understood why it didn't progress to another series. But for some reason, I think it was something of the makeup of Time Team. It was that gung ho, I think, approach that it had, which was not afraid to use the word inspirational, I suppose, about it.
No, I agree with that. It's a very good choice of words, because ultimately that's what you want to do. You want to kind of make people very, very interested in archaeology. And I would agree that it's difficult for other shows to do it without being over the top in a different manner. You know, like Time Team was great because it kept its feet firmly planted in the trench. There was none of this pie in the sky kind of thinking and programming that you might see across the water. And I mean, like, obviously there's a number of other shows related to Time Team. Obviously there is Time Team Over in America. But there's also Time Team Extra and Time Team Digs, which I don't think they never really took over. They basically, those two shows were kind of a bit more, well, they didn't run for very long.
Jenny McNiven, host and diva of The Struggling Archaeologist's Guide to Getting Dirty, brings a witty, personal, and often musical view of archaeology. From personal experiences to just telling you about something she really loves, you'll always be informed and entertained. Listen to The Struggling Archaeologist's Guide to Getting Dirty on iTunes and Stitcher Radio, and at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com/strugglearch. Let's get back to the show.
By a series each, I think. And I can actually, like, looking through their details, it was more about, Time Team Extra, for example, was just more in-depth stuff on particular areas, which is quite interesting, you know. But obviously, I think the fact that, you know, Time Team covered, you know, from the late Stone Age right up to modern times, especially they did even focus on stuff that was Victorian, which I thought, and they do love their manor houses as well. And who could forget Saxon gold turning up in the most unlikely of places? But obviously, it's wonderful to actually see that, you know, people really, really appreciate archaeological programming. And I would be kind of interested to see what a show in the future can do. yeah. and even do better than Time Team, because ultimately, you know, what archaeology, you know, this is the right, well, we've talked all the nice things about Time Team, now it's time to get the guns out. No, I'm kidding, but like, obviously, to an archaeologist, 3-day digs are not normal. They're less than skimming the surface. They're the kind of time you take to have a look and see if you would want to dig further. That's the kind of things. And I want to take first. I'll go to Kim and ask you about what you think of like some of the issues with Time Team that you see from an archaeological point of view.
Well, I think the one of the issues with Time Team that was eventually sorted, or to a degree, was what happened after all of these 3-day digs. I mean, archaeology doesn't stop when you stop digging. You know, there's so much, much, much more that has to be done with everything that you've found and all of the records that you've made after the dig is finished. Obviously, it's not very interesting to film it, obviously. So, not a lot was done with all of that stuff from the first, what, I don't know, 10 or 12 series or something like that, until eventually it became clear that somebody was going to have to write it all up and properly archive it. And I think Wessex Archaeology, through the connection with Phil Harding, got that job in the end. So I think that was... It was a bit of a downside to it, to not show any of that at all, and that was it. Kind of did archaeology a slight disservice that way, I think, not looking at the post excavation process at all. Obviously the 3-day digs in the early days, it was very clear. It seemed to me that they were kind of the start of something that someone else was going to take on. But that kind of fell away again in the later series as well.
I don't know. What do you think, James? How would you tackle this? I mean, obviously, Time Team has a TV show to make. You know, they're obviously going to have to, you know, round off corners. They're going to have to make decisions about making something for TV. And, you know, sometimes archaeology is a lot of digging around in the mud. So how do you see this?
Well, from a TV point of view, it has to be something that isn't slowly grinding along, isn't visually impaired by the normal conditions that we all are, sort of very poor weather that can set archaeologists back days or even weeks. I know they do, or did at least, sort of show it when it was raining, etc., but it wasn't a case of, oh, the show's cancelled, I'm sorry, the conditions or permission couldn't be obtained. But to give it credit, it was very smooth as a show. And it, I guess, almost gives viewers that view that archaeology is, in fact, a very quick process. You can almost pop along for the weekend, do a bit of digging, and completely finish everything to a great standard, or at least a sort of time standard, which we know isn't right now, at least. But it's great for people to see that archaeology is exciting, and when people start to look into it more, though, we'll start to see that actually there is quite a lot more to it. But at that point, hopefully, they would be really engaged, really enthusiastic with it, and would pursue it more. So I would almost consider Time Team like a series of stepping stones for people outside archaeology to be hooked onto it, and then a little more and a little more as they start to progress into amateur archaeology groups, maybe into sort of higher education.
I think that TV has to have that hook, doesn't it? And it's peculiar because at the start of every single edition of Time Team, before the titles, Tony always says, "And we've got just 3 days to find out." And it never occurred to me, really, to go, well, why? Why three? And of course, there's an obvious reason, which is that television has to have that hook, that maybe that challenge element. I think were you to go along and try to seek a commission for a program, especially these days, you'd need something like that, a little sort of enticement to the viewer, you know, we're against the clock, that sort of thing. And it's, I think a television environment just needs that, really. I quite agree. I think that to actually see more of the later processes would be a wonderful thing. And for me, certainly, you know, I've sort of like my own interests of study have taken me more into sort of like the background, of, you know, the social history and things like that. And looking more into the records rather than the ruins, I suppose. But you know, if it weren't for Time Team starting when it did, I think I'm very unfortunate that it did start when it did. I'd already started my degree at that point. If maybe like Kim, if I'd have seen it and then set my mind on a course of study, then there's a good chance I would have. I imagine I could well have gone into archaeology. I would have loved to have done, but I had to adapt my own area of study.
It's okay. We can co-opt you if you want. I'm sure James and Kim will happily we'll do the sacrifice of the ritual and we'll imbue the spirit of archaeology upon you.
I think in TV terms. I think I remember whenever I've read sort of publicity, it's always, this is archaeology against the clock. So, you know, it makes it sound really, really exciting. We've got to do it in this amount of time. So to a TV audience, it's almost a game show element, I suppose, which is used as a hook. Maybe not terribly realistic, but certainly I think it did its job of making it sound as though, you know, that we're in a dicey situation here.
That's actually really, really interesting because I would say, as an archaeologist, that indeed we actually are against the clock, you know, and, you know, because ultimately stuff in the ground slowly does degenerate over time. And, you know, when we have good preservation conditions, like waterlogged sites, it means stuff gets preserved very, very well. But then there are other sites where we have a decay. And actually, due to climate change, we have sites on coastal areas that are now under threat. And, I mean, it's not even in the UK, but I know in Alaska, there's a site at Quinnahock, which is eroding away so fast that they're literally finding artifacts from about 1,000 years ago, almost basically washing into the sea because of the coastal erosion. And I'm pretty sure that there's going to be coastal erosion here in the UK as well. So, I mean, I'd say, like, that's actually something good you've touched on.
That could be.
In a roundabout way, Paul. Because I think we've got our next one. It's a race against the sea. I think we should fight the sea. I know that sounds
I think that's a good hook.
That sounds very Canutian, but I think we should be able to do it. That's it. Canute warriors. That's what we're going to. We're going to fight the sea and save archaeology.
I'd commission that.
Oh, thank you.
That sounds like a good hook.
That's good. James, do we have your backing on this?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the one show I did with Time Team, it was for the special when they were looking at that Bronze Age cairn that was falling into the sea. So having seen it firsthand, it would make for quite an exciting work.
You did an episode with Time Team? Tell us about it, please. You never mentioned this. When did you mention this? You come on my show, you've been on Time Team, and then suddenly I find out you've been on Time Team halfway through. What is that even like? Sorry, James, go on.
It was the Britain's Bronze Age Mummies one up at Low Hawksley, Northumberland. It was a special. I think it was March. March last year. Mm. I think it was broadcast. What it was that, as I think they're starting to do, I don't know whether they'll do many more, is have these sort of special episodes where they start to focus on certain periods or sites and explore them a bit, but not really do too much archaeology themselves. But the presenters will visit either museums or sites or specialists with sort of quite dynamic CGI and a few other bits. And what I did with Dr. Fionn Reynolds was we went up to Northumberland, God, that was a drive up there. And we did some shots on the beach where she was talking to Phil, Tony and Francis Pryor about evidence of British shamanism in the Bronze Age. And I spoke to them and showed them my replica shaman setup based on evidence from Germany and a few other sites. So it was really cool. That was sort of a dream come true, really, being able to actually do something for the series. And there's always that worry that once the series really went, that I'd missed my chance. But no, it was just in time. And it was, funnily enough, at the same time I was digging down in Avebury. So that was a busy old summer, that one.
Oh, I can imagine. That sounds really interesting. I mean, how was it to, like, you were obviously involved in some of the filming. I mean, how did that work? How was the filming done? Was it kind of like, oh, yeah, look like you're digging the trench there? Or, look like you're doing this.
No, no.
And obviously, yeah, you weren't on the dig site, but I just want to know what kind of, how did it feel like to be on set or location, as it were?
Well, the dig site was pretty much next to us. It was literally on the beach. And, you know, the cairn was sort of falling into the sea. And we actually told me in sort of 100 yards away from it, and they'd built a huge bonfire. And they had Tony, Phil and Francis and Fionn sit on the log having a discussion. And if you watch it, and I guess it's on 4OD, you'll see a crazy man dancing and jumping around this bonfire with very strange clothing and teeth rattling about his face. Like, what is this madman from another time doing that? Well, that's actually me. That's not what I normally wear.
Sure.
I might get some odd looks around the university. Certainly be, you know, a bit of a social media stunt, but you know, it was really, really cool because I'd spent a few hours on the dig site chatting to Clive Waddington, who was sort of directing the dig, and it was really good stuff that they were bringing out. And that it was really nice just being on the beach, having a chat with the presenters beforehand, because it was a great place up there. And beforehand, I'd done some CGI work in a green screen studio beforehand as well. So I got both aspects of it, really, which was really, really fun.
No, that sounds really fun, and I'm actually incredibly jealous. You got to dance around in shaman outfit on, like, UK TV. I mean, I must say that is one interesting thing to bring to future employers. Well, you know, I was
yeah, I know. It's
you don't take that shaman stuff out on night out, do you? And like try and convince people you're literally from another time. Because
yeah.
I'm saying, like, about 1 a.m. in the morning, you know, you walk up to people like, I come from 1st AD or like 16th century BC, and people will believe you.
Yeah, you'd scare people senseless, wouldn't you? Be sort of a late Saturday night in Southampton coming down the street with that lot on, you know.
That would be
slightly intimidating.
That would be an interesting archaeological program.
Yeah, next day in the paper, crazy man in animal skins found in Southampton.
I mean, do we need another digging program? That's the question, because, you know, obviously archaeology and digging are very, very, very linked. But, you know, we do have a lot of material. And, you know, in terms of what's stored in museums, what we've already dug up, and, you know, in some ways, arguably, we've got enough material. But, I mean, do we need another time team in the sense of, you know, people digging up and interpreting there on site? Or do you think archaeological programming will, you know, due to restraints and, I'm sure, cuts or everything like that, you know, will we see more museum programs?
Yeah, I would say that most of the programs that are about archaeology at the moment are definitely kind of museum-y based or site, you know, looking like Coast, for instance, going around. It's not necessarily all archaeology, but very much looking at the sites that are already there that we have already done work on and not necessarily going to dig. And that seems to be what we're left with at the moment, and not any digging programs. I think that's what was so amazing about Time Team, was they actually just went and dug. Maybe the next digging program could look at commercial archaeology, although you'd have to get around so many problems with that, with, you know, heavy plant and permissions from the client and things like that. But it just seems to be a very unexplored world for the public. If you tell them that you're a commercial archaeologist, they have absolutely no idea of how that all works. And there you would still get a little bit of the excitement of working against the clock and saving this from being built on or something, you know. Obviously we don't want to go, maybe that's what the whole 3-day dig was trying to recreate, was that idea of rescue archaeology and that idea of having to save it before it was destroyed, but in a slightly artificial way. So I think the digging, looking more at digs maybe that are already going on, that would be an interesting way to go.
Right, Paul, you've had history of broadcasting, or so you tell us. So I mean, what are the kind of hurdles that you think a show about archaeology, from what you know about Time Team and what you've heard today, what are the kind of hurdles do you think for a production kind of company? What sort of hurdles do you think archaeologists need to kind of get over to do with broadcasting, more from a broadcasting point of view?
From a broadcasting point of view, I think, first of all, there is the fact that budgets are being cut and cut and cut. You now have hour-long documentaries being produced for BBC4 on a fraction of the budget that they would have been made on maybe 10 years ago. And obviously a program like Time Team, you know, that's going to cost at the end of the day. So I think budgets is one problem. I think also Time Team may have suffered slightly, possibly to do with its audience, because these days broadcasting is being geared towards the idea of, you know, programs can be time shifted. We record things and we watch them later and all this sort of thing. But maybe that wasn't the sort of audience that Time Team had. I recall a couple of times that series would start and I had no idea they were coming on. They weren't particularly heavily trailed. And also there was the fact that the time slot seemed to shift from week to week. You know, for a good few years, I knew what time Time Team would be on. I knew what time of year Time Team would be on as well. But then all of a sudden, it starts going out at sort of 4:30 in the afternoon on a Sunday, which is inconvenient to watch live. And if there's very little promotion behind it, then you're just not going to know about it particularly. So it's no surprise to me that, you know, the figures slump down to around about that 1.5 million mark. But then again, I think with the way the viewing figures are declining steadily, which is seen year on year, I think it's going to come to a point where people would have dreamt about 1.5 million people watching a show like Time Team. I personally, in terms of a replacement, I don't know why they had to cancel the show. I mean, we can look at such things as falling viewers, but there is this unfortunate preoccupation that people have in television. They're usually the managers, it has to be said. And they look at a program and think, that's very successful, that works. We've got to keep it working. How do we keep it working? So they'll introduce gimmicks. Yeah. Maybe. And it happens, it doesn't just happen in programs like Time Team. I mean, just to go down a completely different road for a moment, most people who work in broadcast will tell you that was why Blind Date died out even. It affects every single program you can think of. And I think possibly Time Team attempted in some ways with introducing a second presenter and things like this to work alongside Tony. I think it tried to reinvent itself when it didn't really need to. You had a formula that worked and had worked for the best part of 20 years. So to me, I don't understand why it had to be changed, but that is something that I'm afraid is so prevalent within television. It works. It works beautifully. So let's keep it fresh. And they don't seem to think that a viewer will just keep watching a program because they enjoy that almost repetitive, formulaic side, especially if the formula is the overall shell of the program. But with Time Team, the contents that they were so varied that I don't think that mattered at all. To me, it's just a real pity that it isn't on there, inspiring a whole new generation. But I can tell you now that my kids sit there and they'll watch the repeats with me on yesterday. They'll sit there and they love them. And for the same reason, bizarrely, as I did, my eldest son has just started to find out about Blackadder. And then one day he saw a little bit of Time Team. There's Baldrick. But then from that, he suddenly developed an interest in comparably recent history. But World War One is absolutely fascinating to him. And because of that now, at least once a month, we head across to our local city museum. And that is entirely because of this wonderful, wonderful TV program that I really think should still be with us now.
That is one of the best stories I've heard in a while. Actually, seriously. And I think that's something I'd love to see repeated. I think people should, you know, get really excited about the past because it is worth so much, you know? Mm. Our past is not just something that has happened. It's something we, day-to-day, like, deal with. And I think that's amazing to hear. And I hope your son turns out to be an archaeologist because archaeologists are awesome.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm sure all my guests would agree. Yes, of course. Of course, we all might see another episode of Time Team sometime soon. How, do you ask? Well, currently, as we mentioned at the start of the show, there's a campaign on at the moment to try and petition Channel 4 to make a new episode. So, guys, I don't know, have you guys heard about this campaign?
Oh yeah, I've signed it, definitely.
Everybody signed it here, I'm guessing.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
And obviously, it's like, this is actually funny enough, I'll say it now. Yeah, this campaign is what brought all of us here together for this show actually today. And I'm very much in support of it, and I really look forward to having a new episode, as it were. And of course, you know, this episode has a special significance because of the passing of Mick Ashton. I don't know about you guys. Do you have any specific memories of him on Time Team?
His hair, actually. not his jumpers, but more his hair. It was a brilliant. I think hair generally, Phil's hair and Mick's hair.
I think you might have been a hairdresser in your other life or something.
Oh, by the sounds of it.
What about you, James? Having, you know, like having been on Time Team, I mean, what stands out for you?
I can always remember Mick being sort of the voice of reason on the show, whilst Tony was trying to big up something that you know, it could be very small, but it could be this. And him being like, well, actually, it might not be quite as much as that, but we'll see how it goes. But from sort of more of a personal memory, he actually came to my secondary school when we were doing some archaeology for a new gym. And they had an archaeology open day. And I can remember chatting to him for sort of a good amount of time. And I think I was about 10. I used to work as a farmhand. And one of the fields had an unknown Roman villa, Bronze Age site, Saxon site, loads on it, and brought it all in an action man box to present to him. And he spent a long time going through it all. So he was really, really good. And it just seemed like he had time for anyone, really. And speaking to other people about him, they all say the same, that, you know, whoever you are, whatever level you were, he had time for you. If he had it, within reason. But he was just seemed genuinely a great guy. So he really was sort of the backbone of the show, or one of the backbones. I think it was just such a shock to the archaeological community to lose this guy who had inspired thousands, who probably didn't think he would inspire just that many people when it started off, even sort of the pilot episodes for Time Team, or before it was Time Team proper. I doubt he thought he would be so significant, such a household name to so many. So it was a great loss, but he was such a great guy as well.
Yeah, I think that, as I said before, you always remember the teacher from your school day who inspired you because they loved what they did so much. And I think that Mick is someone I would have loved to have been taught by, because just by watching him on Time Team, I feel so much more, rich, I suppose. This was a man, obviously, you know, we're not talking about a television presenter, we're not talking about a television personality, we're talking about somebody who loved what they did, in a rather straightforward way as well, and that enthusiasm could draw you in, and I think that it's a terrible shame to everyone in the archaeological community, but it's a terrible shame to the TV viewership as well. I think that to lose someone like that, who is so effortlessly is able to interest you and engage you without the need for an auto cue, I think that that's a rare talent, and I think that I think he'll be missed for as long as those repeats are played out on of Time Team.
And of course, we are in full support of the new show. We're hoping that it does get created. Fingers crossed. I will make sure that the petition is in the show notes below, and hopefully it'll. I know it's going to be something quite special, as Time Team usually does deliver on that front. Thank you to all my guests today, and it's been a very, very special episode. It's also my first episode when I've had more than one person, and so it's been nice to dance between all these voices. Thank you to everybody for being on the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Tristan.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you very much indeed.
No worries. And if any of you have any like blogs or websites or anything that you want to plug, you can do so now.
Who wants to go first?
You, James.
Okay, well, if you're on Twitter, I'm AncientCraftUK. My website is just ancientcraft.co.uk.
Very, very nice. And Paul, you got any blogs that you do or anything?
Well, my various ramblings can be found via Twitter. I suspect my retweets are more interesting than my original tweets, but I'm the at Paul Carmichael V.
Very nice. And finally, Kim.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about schools for history again?
No, everybody knows that from if you listened to the last episode, which of course you did, about schoolsprehistory.co.uk. And I'm on Twitter as SCH Prehistory and also as Kim Bidulph. So quite easy to find me.
Excellent. Thank you very, very much to everybody listening. And hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll see a new Time Team episode. In the meantime, you can check out all the other shows on the Archaeology Podcast Network. And that's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
And goodbye from your Saturday Night Shaman.
That's going to be a hashtag.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.